each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in to The Winds of Change. Here we are. In the wonderful studios of Winds of Change, the a reward room is open there, and the punishment room is ready. It's always ready because we pride ourselves in top-notch professional radio experiences here. And yes, there are dangers in such. I'm Father Tom Coyce. I'm happy to be with you here again. I'm going to try to wrinkle your brain once again, I'm especially filled with many thoughts, some good and some, well, they're all good thoughts, because even a negative thought about something wrong or bad is a good thought. You see what I'm saying? I don't want to fall victim to the heresy of positivity. I haven't said that in a while, I think, but
it begins.
We must put on our deep thinking caps, and we're going to analyze a topic that is very crucial, it's in the minds of many people, and that is evangelization. How do you spread the gospel of Jesus Christ? What is evangelization? And the reason I'm so desirous to talk about this is there seems to be a lot of confusion, and there is a great error, I believe, that needs to be exposed. And here on Winds of Change, I want to help reveal what I think is a mistaken approach to evangelization. I started this last week. Sharing some comments and thoughts.
Wow.
On, I did.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
I wrinkled it last week, and it's going to be more wrinkled today. I guarantee you that. Anyways, if you remember, last week, I don't know, it was 2 weeks ago, unfortunately, wasn't here live last week, sad to say, but here we are. And I was sharing some thoughts on a book that's been very, is talked about, very popular today. And we had the chance to meet the author and listen to his, at times very wonderful, teachings about evangelization. And I want to share some of the good takeaways that I have from listening to Father Mallon. But as I said, without going deeper and without sharing a further thought where a certain kind of evangelization effort can almost be dangerous, we should not approach evangelization without this understanding of the warning, which needs to be appreciated in a very, very serious way. The the Flock note that I sent out regarding the topic of today is the relationship between evangelization and truth. The relationship between evangelization and truth. Now, that might not seem like a connection that needs to be made, but let me guarantee you that it is necessary to make that, because without a real serious and sincere appreciation for what truth means and the truths about God and therefore the truths contained in religion, if you don't have...
My Lord,
oh,
such destruction.
Well, and the destruction that I want to have all of us contemplate and think about is the rebuilding church without the building blocks of truth. Reminiscent to what Jesus was saying about don't build your house on sand, but build it on solid rock. It seems that if what I want to share with you is not appreciated, we are indeed building our house or trying to rebuild our house on sand instead of rock. I started last time when I shared some quotes from a book called Divine Renovation, that the beauty in it, and there is beauty, and there's much to be praised about an enthusiastic desire to bring more people into the faith with a relationship with Jesus Christ, with a relationship with God, involved in a life of the sacraments, involved in an apostolic life where you live the virtue of charity, especially for poor and downtrodden and forgotten. There's great beauty in this desire to have a divine renovation. I'm glad he doesn't use the word reformation, because that would give away, in a certain sense, a mistaken way at which we can evangelize or rebuild. But unfortunately, I have to point out where I think that Father Mallon is making sort of the mistake he's criticizing. He's making the mistake that he says is a part of the problem. What is a part of the problem? In simple terms, his theory of evangelization is to move away from concern about the method to an appreciation or a concern about the mission. So we need to move from method to mission, is the phrase that we heard. We hear quite a bit. And
you just wrinkled my brain, man.
Very good, very good. There is a wisdom in that thinking if you put some parameters around your definitions of the words. Method could mean a lot of different things, but it especially means in the context of Catholic religion. This has been the case with non-Catholic Christians who often criticize Catholicism. Things like sacraments and catechism are considered methods. And so therefore, many who have left the Catholic Church, who criticize Catholicism, take the stand that sacraments themselves are methods. And therefore, that's kind of the meaning behind the term of one of the mainstream Protestant denominations called Methodism, Methodists, that we have a their stance vis-a-vis or in relationship to Catholicism is we have a different method. You Catholics have this method that is filled with sacraments, and we don't. So, therefore, if Father Malin's pitch to get away from method and concentrate on mission doesn't recognize the divinely established methods known as sacraments and the divinely revealed methods that are contained in catechetical works known as catechisms and creeds, you do away with the whole essence of the mission. And I found his talks and his writings filled with a great deal of ambiguity about the mission. So therefore, in most of his talks was about criticizing methods of the past. And so therefore, it's easy to criticize things of the past. And it's easy to point in generalities to a hopeful vision that is ambiguous and undefined. And that's kind of, this is what is frustrating or in need of clarification. That's why I titled my little hour today as the relationship between evangelization and truth. Are sacraments truly established by Jesus Christ? Did Jesus Christ truly establish a church that would, in a sense, own and organize and maintain and administer and watch out for and all the rest of the sacraments? And along with that sacramental life, there is also a parallel or an equally valuable and equally accessible and maybe even in some sense more accessible truth that's contained in a moral code, a lifestyle, a sense of this is right and this is wrong. There, Thomas Aquinas, the great theologian of the past, who is not really used too much today, but he still has such great value. He was quick to point out that in the area of being, you can, in the area of reality, and we want our religion to be real. We don't want it to be imaginary. We want it to be based on truth. In the area of being, you can come to two very important, we'll call them binaries. That's a popular word today. You can come to two important binaries. That is true or false, or right and wrong. It's the basic classic beginning of theology. The plug for evangelization today, which seems to, at least in my humble estimation, scream out ambiguity. I say it screams out ambiguity because as I listen to Father Malin and others speak about evangelization, I constantly heard terms like we need to change, we need to do something new, we need to be able to discard the old, and but it was never defined. The language is in a, to be perfectly honest, kind of politically spirited in the sense of like the revolutionary will scream and shout, let us tear down this government without having a clear or without identifying what it is wrong about it. We're just going to take down the whole thing, and without explaining what they're going to build in the process, you just have to hope and wait for the one who you follow and the one who you listen to, who's tearing down the whole thing, will have a better idea. But you don't hear that better idea, and my request, and those who are listening to this radio show, and perhaps some of you may have been at the Divine Renovation Evangelization Whoa. Summit.
You just wrinkle my brain, man.
Yeah. Studying our faith does wrinkle our brain because it confronts us with various truth about, again, what's true and what's false, what's right and what's wrong, the area of being and the area of doing. Who are we really in the context of a God who we claim to be a creator, and how do we live, how do we act, what's our moral code once we accept that truth. But the spirit of the evangelism, the popular form of evangelism today, is quite frankly reminiscent of the beginnings of Protestantism, where Martin Luther used the phrase live by faith and faith alone. Don't dirty the waters, don't ruffle the seas, don't make waves, or don't add these rules and regulations, either rules and regulations that have to do with liturgy and our sacramental life, or rules and regulations that would have to do with our moral life. And since marriage is one of the sacraments, and there are rules about being married in the Catholic Church, and many of the do's and don'ts, the rights and wrongs about life do touch on the sacred relationship of man and woman, known as marriage. So, but I'm going to take a quick break here. We're going to try to get into this and unpack this a little bit further. The relationship between evangelization and truth, it's a topic that we must digest a bit more, and we'll do so as soon as I come back. I'm Father Tom Coyce. I'm sitting here for Father Anthony Bush on listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Please join in praying a rosary for our nation by joining in Rosary Coast to Coast, Saturday, October 7th at 3 p.m. at the Access Health Center, 1700 75th Street in Downers Grove, Illinois. For more information, see rosarycoasttocoast.com.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for tuning in to The Winds of Change. I'm trying to wrinkle your brain by discussing in a deep way the relationship between evangelization and truth. I picked this as my topic because evangelization is obviously a big topic in the church. As we witness the shrinking of the church in important ways, especially with perhaps mergers and closures of of Catholic parishes. I want to point out something that you may not have had pointed out, but it definitely needs pointing out. The fact that our Catholic Church is poised to merge and close a number of churches obviously sets people into thinking about, whoa, what's going on here? What's going on with our church house? It brings up many questions about Catholicism, your religion in general. And for many, it may throw one to thinking that this church is wrong. If they're going to close this church for one or another reason, I'm going to be very mad. Of course, I'm not going to think about it in terms of theology or administrative realities. I'm just going to be mad. And what could be thought of is then, let's start our own church. Ooh, that was a mad person. That was kind of thought so. It sounds like a mad rooster. I think that's what the cartoon was. That big rooster guy. Anyways, the reaction from a person's church closing, of course, can be very emotional, and it will have negative feelings attached to it. Of course, you can't help that. But to say the answer, in a certain sense, lies in making our own church, or let's start our own church, which some places have contemplated that, is to follow the example of the Protestants. To do that is to say that Protestantism has a better form of methodology and administration of churches than Catholicism does. But I need to point out that Catholic churches being closed makes national news, or at least local news, in a big way, whereas Protestant churches have been... Yeah, that's the sad part of it. But you need to appreciate this, my friends. Protestant churches have been being closed by the dozens much more than Catholic churches have. Protestant churches being kind of the function of a community, of a certain neighborhood, and loyalty to that pastor when, especially if people move into that neighborhood where poverty begins to rise and people who are attached to the church have the means to move to a better, a less impoverished area, will quickly do so. And then many of those congregations will move lock, stock, and barrel and out to a more suburban location. They'll sell the old church to another Protestant denomination and start a new church somewhere else, as I say, in a less impoverished area. And many times those people, if they're attached to their church strongly enough, will look for a house to buy around the new established church. So what I'm saying is that what the Catholic Church is going through now in terms of mergers and closing of churches is something that Protestant churches do quite a bit, but it doesn't get on the evening news. There's a certain kind of pride in my heart by saying that, because the Catholic churches have a better tradition of longevity in a neighborhood, even when the neighborhood changes ethnicity or economic status. Priests will be sent to the church, a new priest, a different nationality, willing to work in a more poor area, as it were, and that the church can continue. But we're facing our limits even with that. So, but it is wise to ask ourselves the question, How do we evangelize, and what are we bringing people to? It is a legitimate thought about what is our method and what is our mission, but Catholicism especially, because we are a creedal religion, meaning we have creeds and we have a catechism, I find it delightful. I do listen to Moody Radio Bible or Moody Bible Radio every now and then, and some of you who are in and around the Chicago area here might know what I'm talking about. That's a radio station of one of the largest evangelical Protestant, you could sort of call it a Whoa. Denomination. I'll call it a denomination.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, that's a... I'll call it a denomination, but they like to consider themselves non-denominational. I always like to tell my Protestant brothers and sisters, if you're looking for a non-denominational church, then you need to come to Catholicism, because Catholicism truly is the only Christian religion that's truly non-denominationalism. In other words, we believe there shouldn't be denominations. There should be one Christian church. But getting deeper and deeper then into the fact that the mission of evangelization includes creeds and catechism along with a moral code. And part of the moral code deals with life, with marriage, and with going to church. Part of the moral code of a Catholic, when you learn what's the commandments and you learn what fairness is and justice is, you are supposed to learn that we owe God worship. We are His creatures, and God asks us a few things. One of the things He asks is that He be worshipped. Jesus taught us how to worship Him in the way He wants to be worshipped, and so therefore we connect our idea of the obligation of going to Mass with being fair to God. It's being fair to God. So here's where a moral consideration, namely justice and fairness, is connected to a sacramental area of faith, namely going to church. But again here, I want to remind you of the basic outline or the basic category of criticism I have of what I see going on in the church today. And that is, I find many of those who are pushing and leading our Catholic evangelical efforts are constantly making a mistake. The mistake they're making is preaching a false dichotomy. They're preaching a false dichotomy. How are they preaching a false dichotomy? The dichotomy is the dichotomy between a relationship with Jesus and the rules and regulations, shall we say. Many in the church today are saying, don't try to get people going to church or back to a faithful living of their religion by talking about the rules and regulations. First, talk to them about love of Jesus Christ and starting to have a relationship with Jesus Christ. Now, I'm perfectly willing to say that at some times with some people, that's a very good start. I'm not going to tell you got to go to church on Sunday. I'm not going to tell you to not live with your boyfriend or girlfriend. I'm not going to tell you to not cheat and steal and lie. I'm not going to tell you, I'm going to ask you, do you love Jesus? Do you have a relationship with Jesus? And that may be a very, very good opening approach to evangelization. I don't want to deny that is a possible approach. What I don't like is when that approach is raised in a superior level to the other approach. That would be, why don't you straighten out your life first, and then you'll be able to find God? Why don't you stop doing this or that? And oftentimes it's things like in relationships between boyfriends and girlfriends, husbands or wives, or unfaithfulness in that sense. Why don't you stop this immoral thing or start doing something moral? And then you'll start to appreciate that Jesus Christ is the author of what is right and what is wrong, what is true and what is false. So what I'm sharing with you, and I'm holding your attention. If you are interested in this topic of evangelization today, the fear and the problem I see is this setting up of a false dichotomy, and I see it as a modern incarnation of the problem that St. James had to deal with when we read his letter in the letters of James, especially James 2, where he pits, where he's trying to defend himself. It's as if he's being criticized for talking about do's and don'ts, because he says, show me your faith without works, and I'll show you my works that are founded on faith. And of course, Martin Luther takes up that binary or that dichotomy, as it were, and exploits it in an incredibly strong way. The phrase of the early Protestants, that is to say, the phrase of "don't do works, just have faith," is very similar to what I see happening in our modern times, where people are saying, "Don't worry, or don't." The moral aspects of right and wrong don't have power, as it were. Only the more subjective love of Jesus. The love of Jesus and a relationship with Jesus can be likened to the interlocutors, the opposing voices of St. James when he's writing in his epistle, those to whom he is saying, show me your faith without works. Those very people are found in the spirit of not only of Martin Luther, but all the Protestant church people that followed him, and it's growing today in our modern attempts to rebuild and turn the church from in Martin Luther's day it was turn the church from corruption, and that obviously was a part of the historical context of the Reformation, no doubt about it. Today we might see something very similar. The desire to rebuild up the church can't be separated from a sense that corruption in the church has led to a diminution, a weakening, a shrinking of the church. But unfortunately, that's often not mentioned. So be that as it may. Now, there's another thing. My goodness.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
It looks like Nick is telling me time is going by so fast. We'll take another quick break. I want to come back to just the very topic of truth has to be an essential part. And I almost want to say it is the essential part of evangelization, and connected to a wonderful book I'm discovered, an old book by Peter Kraft called Because God is Real. And he gets it, and he teaches it well, what I think is missing in our present efforts of evangelization. Okay, hold on, and I'll be right back. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
On Saturday night, October 6th, from 7 until 9, at St. Stanislaus Kostka, Father Angel Espinoza will give a special talk on the urgent need to train your children in the seven fields of true education. The talk will be in Spanish. Here's Christina to tell you more.
El sábado 6 de octubre de 2018, en las 7 de la tarde a las 9 de la noche, la parroquia de San Estanislao Kostka y el Padre Ángel Espinosa los invitan a una conferencia sobre cómo les estamos enseñando a nuestros hijos la fe. ¿Estamos enseñando la fe popular y nada más por encima? ¿O realmente estamos enseñándoles a vivir la fe de una manera profunda, a practicarla diariamente en su vida? Regístrate y compra tu boleto de $30 en la página del web www.stanschurch.org. El cupo es limitado, solo se venderán 5 boletos por persona. Para más información, favor de llamar a la parroquia al 773-278-2470, de nuevo 773-278-2470. De nuevo el sábado 6 de octubre del 2018, de las 7 de la tarde a las 9 de la noche, en la iglesia de San Estanislao Kostka, ubicada al 1327 Norte de la Noble en Chicago. Los esperamos.
For complete information and ticket purchase information, go to stanschurch.org and click on the events tab.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule, work, or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for being here. I am wrinkling your brain, and I feel a little bad that the focus of my topic today is not that broad. In a certain sense, it's not for the vast population. It's my topic is not for the people who might consider themselves nuns, N-O-N-E-S, the people who don't have a religion. Although it might possibly be, especially if you're disappointed with the church and that's why you're a nun, N-O-N-E. If you don't go to church because you're finding something missing in the way that churches today, perhaps hearing this critique of what I'm sharing, a critique of the kind of evangelization efforts that are being made, if you're a person that has a real sense of truth, a desire for truth, you don't want to cling to a religion because it's someone else's opinion. You don't want to cling to a religion because it makes you feel good. You don't want, although a lot of people do just that. But if you're a kind of person that has this inbred, and I think everyone does deep down enough that it's true. I'm going to worship God because I think God is real. To go to church and think that you're worshiping God, but God is imaginary, is silly. But yet, that's what can develop if the concept of truth is separated from the concept of evangelization and our worship life. So, the book that I just stumbled upon recently. Again, it's Peter Kreft's Because God is Real. I highly recommend it to you. And he starts out his meditation by saying, why are questions good? Why are questions good? It seems, again, another silly question, but it's not a silly question. And he says, he follows up his question with other questions as if somebody who is sitting at his feet or inquiring or wanted to know more might ask, where he says, well, which questions are we talking about? Obviously, you don't ask a question, which questions are good when you're trying to get from point A to point B and you're looking at a train schedule and you want to know which train will take you to point B? That's an obviously practical question. He says the questions he's talking about are not like what's on TV today or who is the president of France. They're questions like, why do I exist? Or why must I die? Why are we not happy? Questions like that. Those are deeper, different kind of questions than which train is the right train to take if I want to get to Pittsburgh. Or should I say Milwaukee? I forgot to mention that. Forgot to mention, my friends, you might pick up a little sadness in my voice because I'm in mourning today. I got to just share that with you. I'm in mourning because last night my Cubbies went down. The Cubbies went down to the amazing Rockies. And so our season is over. And now I'm going to root for the Brewers because they're our neighbors. And yeah, it's very sad, very sad. But you can't expect to win many series in the playoffs when you don't score any runs or to score one run and think you can beat the other teams is not going to work. And that seems like what was going on. So anyways, back to our more philosophical religious questions. And he asked this follow-up question. What makes a question important? Because we want to concentrate on important questions. And he says such like this: how much is 2,222,222 divided by 3.3? Is not an important question. How much does he love me is an important question. Who wrote Our Town is not an important question, but is that our town that's on fire is an important question. I recently was talking to one of my priest friends from Wyoming who we talked to him on the phone, and he said he was at a meeting in his diocese. They were talking about evangelization and what have you, and probably diversity training, some such thing that's so popular today. And he got a text that there's wildfires going on in Wyoming. They're moving north and they're heading toward the wonderful town of Jackson, Wyoming, one of my favorite towns in the USA. It's such a beautiful place right there at the foot of the Grand Teton Mountains. And he said he saw that the fire was approaching. He has a little cottage up in the mountains there, and he bolted out of the conference to go see what he can do and be close to his little cabin, which indeed was completely destroyed by the forest fire. So obviously the question, is that our town that's on fire, is an important question. So anyways, let's continue a bit, because this points to the need for a strong marriage. I'll put it this way: a strong marriage between any and all evangelization efforts and truth, be it truth of what is true and false or truth of what is what right and wrong. And that's the incredible ambiguity that I found so frustrating in our evangelization conference, that seems to avoid discussions about what is true and false regarding the person of Jesus. You see, encouraging people to have a relationship with Jesus is a very small initial part of evangelization. First of all, because a lot of people are Christian who are not Catholic, of course. And of course, a lot of those people either go to another church or don't go to church at all. And many times people will say, oh, yes, I have a relationship with Jesus. And you could push them and say, what does that mean? But it's a very opening phase. It's almost a little bit like, is God real? In another way, that opens a mind to the question of, is God real? And many people are not atheists, so they'll say yes. And that, so getting someone to agree that God is real, that there is a God, that they're not an atheist, is a very opening line in the process of evangelization. Getting someone to agree that they believe there is a God is a long way from getting them involved in your church, going to Mass, becoming a lector, joining the St. Vincent de Paul Society, helping with AA meetings and all the rest of the good things that can and should be done in and around a church. So, but that that spirit of yearning for a truth is very important. Peter Kreft says, What makes a question important? Okay, well, Nick wants me to take another quick little break, so we're going to come right back, and we're going to follow up on this and hopefully give you a little more insights into the beauty and the excitement of evangelization when it is tied to sacraments, creeds, and morals. I'm Father Tom Coyce. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Get in touch with God.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
You've got your radio turned on to Winds of Change, where you can hear about your faith and hear about today's culture through the lens of Christ's teachings with Father Anthony Bush and others, Monday through Friday at noon on AM 750. Keep Winds of Change on by going to ststandschurch.org and click on the radio tab to donate. And Winds of Change offers thanks for your donation.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stan's School has an amazing PK 3 through 8th grade program focused on leadership and social-emotional learning, and is one of the only schools to implement the Reading and Writing Project of Columbia University and the University of Chicago. Everyday math across the board, PK 3 through 8th, is taught by our highly educated and dedicated teachers. St. Stan's students are academically challenged with advanced level placement opportunities as their test scores and high school admissions speak volumes. St. Stan's is an integral part of the Wicker Park community, where you feel welcome and at home with other families and friends who enjoy the same warm, friendly, and safe atmosphere for their children. We have small classroom size, which makes a difference in the whole learning experience. Many schools have excellent programs. At St. Stan's, we empower students to be excellent. Join the St. Stan's family. It is a selective admissions process. Grades 1 through 8 are tested and interviewed. Call 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. Or stop by at 1255 North Noble Street. That's one block north of Division, just off the Kennedy. More information at ststandschicago.org. That's ststandschicago.org.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for being with us. I'm trying to guide us through a quagmire of sorts. I'm giving a critique of the Divine Renovation presentation by Father Mallon. To be perfectly honest, I like the guy. There's something so likable about him. And there are good takeaways. Anything that helps loosen us up a little bit at times to try to get to a little deeper appreciation of who and what we are, and something that shakes us out of a kind of a comfortable. Another phrase that's used quite a bit is to move a parish from a maintenance parish to a mission parish. And there's something very good in that. A maintenance means take care of the people that are in the pews, and you don't do much about trying to get new people in the pews. Almost all the parish organizations, like Holy Name Society, Altar and Rosary Societies, Ladies Guilds, Knights of Columbus, those kinds of groups face the ultimate question: hey, we're getting older, and we don't have a lot of new people joining. That's an important question. Everybody, and all the officers of the organization know that. And it's very difficult. It's very difficult. But it is possible to be just in maintenance mode, where you're not really worried about getting new people in. You're just trying to do what you can with the people you have. So there's something very wise about moving from a maintenance to a mission parish. But here's my critique. To downplay or to introduce this false dichotomy between a relationship with Jesus and our creeds and moral code, as it were, to introduce that as a dichotomy, or that the relationship with Jesus has a certain kind of superior role to play in our evangelization, I think that's the problem. You could say it like this: sometimes a person realizes a kind of a lonely ache in his heart that needs to be filled up, and he can't fill it up. No human being fills that up, and he realizes that it's God. I got to be connected to God. I want to have a relationship with Jesus. It often is attached to a need for forgiveness, where no one else is forgiving me. I can't forgive myself, but going to Jesus and hearing that Jesus forgives everyone, it's the spirit behind a person's conversion in a typical sense, especially in the sense of why many Protestant churches have what are called altar calls. And altar calls are beautiful in a lot of ways. The people oftentimes will come up and give incredibly beautiful and moving stories of, they're really confessions oftentimes, confessions similar to what a priest will hear in confession. Do you know what I mean? A person with a witness story will often say, I was so wrong. I mistreated my wife. I was on drugs. I even hurt this person, or maybe I got arrested for this or that. You know, the whole litany of their sins is laid before the people listening to them. And then, of course, the minister says, well, put that all behind you. Jesus loves you and Jesus accepts you. And we go on from there. And oftentimes the witness session is ended with a round of applause, right? And as it should be. But, of course, that's one method. And but Catholics have something, a sacrament called the sacrament of penance. That often happens on a daily, weekly basis. It's a special privilege that us priests are privy to when we see people confessing their sins and coming back. Though, of course, the same problem with a personal individual confession can also happen with a personal individual witness talk, right? What are some of the personal problems of an individual confession? Well, you say you're sorry and you go back and you do it again. The same thing can happen to a personal witness story too. So let's see, how should I end this? We're coming quickly to the end of our way here. And I'm going to come back to Peter Kreft in another week. But what I think I want to share with you, this involves something going on in the church today very, very significantly, and it brings some of these themes together. You may or may not have heard that there's going to be another synod. Pope Francis doing what Pope should do, is call people together and discuss and dialogue and help clarify. But that's part of the issue right here now. But anyways, there's going to be a youth conference in Rome, and some documents were sent out sort of to help the participants of the Synod on the youth prepare for it. And what I want to share with you is a very interesting and important letter from Archbishop Chaput. He writes this, and just digest it a little bit. He says that the instrumentum laboris, which is the kind of introduction or preamble, the documents sent out for the upcoming synod on young people, the faith, and vocational discernment. He says, in an introductory paragraph, Archbishop Chaput explains that the analysis was received, this critical analysis he received from a respected North American theologian. There was an article that appeared in First Things which warns that the instrumentum, the document, veers dangerously close to heresy, specifically the heresies of naturalism, Lutheranism, and relativism. It begins by criticizing its naturalist understanding of modern sexual dysfunctions, widespread promiscuity, online pornography, and the like. The document laments only its disfiguring the beauty and depth of affirmative and sex life. He writes, no mention is made about the disfigurement of the soul, its consequential spiritual blindness, the impact on the reception of the gospel by one so wounded. I'm going to stop there for just a second, because I think that's a beautiful way of saying something that I'm trying to say too to my people, and that is the fact of a large population of priests that are gay. They may do the rituals correctly, they may organize the people in a beautiful way, but a gay person who struggles with same-sex attraction has a different kind of conscience formed within him. That's what I think this theologian is saying by saying a disfigurement of the soul, a spiritual blindness. And that is a bad thing for a teacher of doctrines and morals. That's why the approach of evangelization that only really uses a relationship with Jesus and downplays the creeds and moral codes is so popular today, unfortunately. Bishop Chaput continues, This theologian claims the document exhibits an inadequate grasp of the church's spiritual authority, denying her role as a teaching authority. According to this instrumentum, the church will opt for dialogue as her style and method. No vocation, especially within the church, can be placed outside this ongoing dynamism of dialogue. So according to the critical theologian, this amounts to saying the church does not possess the truth, but must take its place alongside other voices. Were the church to abandon her ministry of preaching, that is, were the roles of the church, the teaching church and the listening church, to be inverted, the hierarchy itself would be inverted and the ministerial priesthood would collapse into the baptismal priesthood. In short, we would become Lutherans. So it's a very key critique of what's going on. Thank you for being a Winds of Change listener, my friends. Let's keep our hearts and our minds praying and open and studying. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You've been listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
The world makes no sense. Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Meaningless thought, the shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed.